The last tourney had been different, Sansa reflected. King Robert had staged it in her father's honor. High lords and fabled champions had come from all over the realm to compete, and the whole city had turned out to watch. She remembered the splendor of it, the field of pavilions along the river with a knight's shield hung before each door, the long rows of silken pennants waving in the wind, the gleam of sunlight on bright steel and gilded spurs. The days had rung to the sound of trumpets and pounding hooves, and the nights had been full of feasts and song. Those had been the most magical days of her life, but they seemed a memory from another age now.
Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast.
Okay, guys, welcome to the first White Book episode of Season 11 that is really strictly talking Thrones. This one might be a double treat for folks who are listening. We've got a new comrade in arms, so to speak, in the podcast world, Zero Reserve, who just recently did an episode with the Joust Champ. So here we go now, doubling down on that and forcing him to be on two shows in 1 week. So there's bound to be a little bit of overlap here, but I think we've found a few different angles to kind of talk that might freshen things up a little bit. So without further ado, I introduce you to Francis, our 2019 Joust World Champion and the final official World Champion. How does that feel?
It still feels surreal to say that I have won. I didn't go to that tournament going in. Even if I was on Tarkseal Blood, I wasn't expecting to go all the way. Mm-hmm. So it still feels surreal, but it's starting to sink in when people keep mentioning it back to you. And I go back and watch the games, and it's starting to settle in, but it still feels unreal.
Well, and seeing your face on the banner picture at the top of the Facebook group, that's got to cement it a little bit too.
Yeah, exactly. And even at work, my colleagues were following it a bit, so really? they did they were following. One of my good buddies works with me, and so they did a little article for some of the workers to say that I won and what it was exactly. So it's pretty interesting to see that everyone back home who never really followed it mm-hmm. before is following it now since I won the world championship. But it still feels great.
That's awesome that they were following you. Did you go put up any sort of display in your office or anything?
No, nothing. No display. Just talked a bit about it with one of my colleagues. And then when I won, sent him a message, and then he made sure to tell everyone back at work, the following Monday. So I had a nice welcome back when I got back to work.
Well, I'm just floating the idea here. I bet that playmat would look really nice framed on a wall somewhere. Just say
it. It's going to stay at home. Yeah, everything stays okay at home.
Yeah. Well then, so what do you do? Not to delve too far into work, but now you've piqued my curiosity.
Yeah, so I work for a company that hires people with disabilities, either physical or mentally okay disabled. And we do subcontracting work for any type of companies. So a lot of companies here have trouble hiring people for labor. And it's a easy way for people who do have a lack of labor or workers to get contracts with us. And so we like I said, it's pretty broad, where we go from packaging for food to clothing to all kinds of contracts. So yeah, so I manage a team of around 10 people every day, where we work for one of the a big food company here, and we do basically we package the food to send to stores. So it's one of the big contracts okay that we have.
That sounds like a good job, like very rewarding, I would think, to be helping out those people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's why I went there. It's very rewarding to see that you can make a difference in these people's lives. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
Awesome. Well, turning away from real life, let's really get into the nitty gritty of why folks are here. Hobby life. So how did you wind up getting into Game of Thrones? How long have you been playing, and whereabouts are you? I know Canada, but I have forgotten which meta you're a part of there.
So I'm in Quebec City, about 2 hours and a half away from Montreal.
Okay.
And I got into the game. I was looking for a board game online about Game of Thrones. So I found a board game. I wanted to know strategies to help. My buddies are more casual gamers. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to find strategies for them in case they were in whatever house they were for the board game back then. And I landed on Rob St. John's gaming table. And he had tournament videos from 1.0 in Ottawa or Montreal, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I was pretty interested. So I go to my hobby store back home. I ask questions about it, and they told me to not spend on it since they were releasing 2.0 soon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I waited until 2.0 was released, and I bought a core set, but never thinking I was going to jump into a card game competitively. I just wanted to play with my buddies back home.
Right.
And there was a business card on back of the box from the Beyond the Wall podcast.
Oh, good thinking.
And yeah. So Alex Hines had organized all of that with a store to make sure that people would be directed to his podcast and to his Facebook group. Mm-hmm. And then we chatted a bit about meeting up to learn the game. At first, I wasn't sure, but I wanted to know the game. I just wanted to play with my friends. Like I said, I didn't know it's going to be such a complicated game. I didn't know what I was getting into it.
Well, I was just going to say, you mentioned board games at first. Did you mean that in just the general sense, or specifically you were looking for info on the Game of Thrones board game that FFG makes, and then you stumbled into the LCG?
Yeah, so I was just looking for any random board game, and I did stumble onto the Game of Thrones
okay
one. And I was a fan of the show, so I wanted to know more. And then I stumbled onto the card game from looking into the board game strategies for the Game of Thrones okay board game.
I mean, isn't the main strategy for the Game of Thrones board game to play Baratheon? I feel like that's the
answer. To not play Lannister, right?
Maybe. If you get really lucky and the Greyjoys don't just decide that they hate you.
Yeah. So, yeah, when I play with my buddies, we just random pick.
Okay.
So we don't get to pick Baratheon or anything. But, yeah, so that's how I found the card game. And then I met up with Alex one night with another new player, and he taught us the game, and I bought two core sets right away, and I never looked back.
Awesome. Well, I know we had talked just a little bit on Facebook a couple times beforehand, but Worlds, I'm pretty certain, was the first I had met you in person. Had you traveled much to play before this point, or was Worlds your first main big thing too?
Worlds was my first main event. I went to Canadian Nationals every year. But the first year was pretty big, but I was still new to the game, so I wasn't expecting any much from going there. I think I finished middle of the road, 3-3 at Canadian Nationals every year, except this year where I finished last.
Wow, last at Canadian Nats to first in the world. If that's not the biggest turnaround story I've ever heard.
that was a pretty bad weekend for me, and just overall playing cards, everything went bad that weekend. But so that's pretty much the furthest I've went. I went to Nashua one year. The first year the game was released, I went to a Nashua regional. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Rochester regional last year as well.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about the furthest I've been, except for Worlds.
So that's a good little bit.
Yeah.
So for your excursion to Worlds then, I'm sure some work went into that. Did you really buckle down and spend months testing different decks? Did you work with a specific build group? This may be treading into territory I'm sure they covered on Zero Reserve, but I feel like we should start there at least.
Yeah, so I had planned to go to Thrones War in California before World was moved to February. Mm-hmm. February. So I had planned to go to California, take a 2-week vacation over there, and then when it was moved, I decided to change my vacations for January, and I went to Hawaii. So I knew when I decided to go to Worlds, I knew that I had not much testing. I didn't have much testing time just before Worlds because I was gone for 3 weeks. So I started testing Targ Sea of Blood around the same time I was testing for Kenyan Nationals. So I've been testing it for a long time, but I didn't take it over there. I took Targ Knight of the Hollow Hill, which was obviously a mistake. And then, so I started testing Targ Sea of Blood more seriously when I got into the World Cup. So I went 5-0 in the World Cup in the Swiss rounds before the Targ box was released. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was onto something, but I knew the Targ box would just make it so much better. But at the same time, the cards were just so good in the Targ box for Targ Seal Blood that I knew it was going to be everywhere and the counters were going to be everywhere. But I knew I had to double down on that deck, knowing that I didn't have much time right before Worlds to switch it up. So I've been on Targ Seal Blood with the box ever since the box.
So nothing else then was ever really in the running for you.
I consider Bera Cohort because I like to finish my games fast. but Targ Seal Blood finishes fast as well. It's just that Bera Cohort was good against Lani Shadows. Mm-hmm. And it was our worst matchup, but I was able to avoid it all event.
Yeah, I feel like Sea of Blood matches end very quickly. It's just they don't always get to 15 power quickly.
yeah, exactly. They it's a slow punishment.
Yeah, unless your opponent just goes ahead and scoops, which
yeah, exactly.
I've been there. I didn't do it at Worlds, but I've been there in other games.
Yeah, I played against Kristen in my round two, and she didn't scoop. So
good on her. Going to bring that up actually that you played my wife on your way to the top. So
yeah,
I like to think that, you know, without her, who knows what would have happened? Because I'm looking here at your record for day 1B, and I see you lost round one, And then you got paired against Kristen in round two. And without that self-esteem boost from winning that game, who knows what would have happened? You know,
exactly. She was the first one to put me in the win column.
Oh, man. Good times. I was glad she had nothing but good things to say about playing against you, despite it being a game loss for her. So,
yeah, I tried to be nice about wiping her board.
Yeah, if there is a way to be nice about that.
With a smile.
Yeah. Well, okay. I think that leads us into some different territory to chat about. And let's talk a little bit about how things can potentially go wrong for Targ Sea of Blood. So let's start, I suppose, first with what you said was probably what you thought was your worst matchup going into Worlds. Did you say Barret Cohort just a moment ago? Or
no, Rani Shadow.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, Rani Shadow. I flipped him. So yeah. What wound up determining that as a bad matchup for you? What kind of pieces pose a problem for Sea of Blood?
So Sir Robert Strong is enemy number one. He just kills the important guys, and we don't have many six casters other than Khal Drogo and the Raid in Kalasar. Mm-hmm. But obviously, we don't marshal the Raid in Kalasar very often. We usually cheat him in with overwhelming numbers. Mm-hmm. They also have a very strong military presence on the board with Robert Strong, but other characters who all mostly have a military icon and a decent strength. So that was one of the issues. I also had a lot of issues with Bolt and Flare, where their characters were mostly three and up and mine were two and low under. Mm-hmm. So a turn of Bolt and Flare, Robert Strong, and then one mill claim, and then they can get your board down very quickly and make sure that you're not even able to use overwhelming numbers. So that's something that happened to me in testing a lot. They also usually run two resets, even three, if they're playing both Valors and the first snow. So that was also very annoying. So depending on what cards we would see, the matchup was very hard. Like I mentioned on Zero Reserve, I was on the Iron Throne, the Long May He Reign Iron Throne. I had two or three copies in my deck for a long time just to counter that that deck. But they playtested it very, very... they playtested in the test house. They were playtesting it with the Iron Throne directly on setup, not even drawing it, just having it on setup, and it still wasn't... Yeah, it still wasn't doing enough work, and Alejandro mentioned it to me. So just before the event, I decided to cut them, knowing that it was a terrible matchup for me, but I still had to live with it. And also, the plot deck was built more to be able to handle Barret Cohort, because that was another bad matchup. We flipped it with the plots. We added Marched and Valor Morghulis, and those two plots were very good against the faster decks, but it made sure that we were almost auto losing to Lani Shadows if we didn't have the right guards.
I am a little surprised to hear about Morghulis in there. That one is not one I was thinking of for Sea of Blood.
Yeah, the reason why it was added is that we while testing the Lani Shadows versus Barret Cohort matchup, we realized that we like to open Lani with Valor Morghulis for Lani Shadows against Barret. And I tossed it in the air to Alejandro, like, why don't we do the same thing with Targ? We had a few flex plots. We were on two return to the field, so we decided to cut one of those. And then we cut one of the summer plots. We had close call or exchange of information in the other slot. And we decided to cut that for the Marched as well.
Was close call then mainly just for Drogo, or if something happened?
No, Drogo was really good as well, or even Koto. So the close call was good against the Lani Shadows to get back one guard. And it also, one of the interactions where was that it puts the character back into your discard pile, which usually doesn't mean much, but with overwhelming numbers, it's just so good because you can put it back in your hand.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but we decided that Land Shadows was going to be the one bad matchup we were going to have and focus on all the other matchups where we can beat them. So Stark was another one of the matchups where if they don't have the dupes, we can just Valor M the board and make sure that we have a cleaner path to victory with the tempo that we have on the deck.
And interestingly, I was double checking who all you played through the weekend. So you didn't actually wind up playing against Lanny Shadows at all, did you?
No, I was able to.
That's funny. Do you think then it was still the right call to hedge those bets, or in retrospect would you have tweaked that some?
No, I still feel like it was the right call. I'm pretty sure Alex Black beat Lanny Shadows in his on his way to the finals in the top 64 round or top 32 round. It was a terrible matchup, okay, but it was still winnable.
Well,
I think like it was a 40-60 mm-hmm. or something like that matchup.
Okay.
No, I was able to dodge it, but I still faced like I think I faced four Starks on day one, and then
one other one on day two.
Stark was another one of those matchups where, as you can see, those are my two losses, and the one against Chris Schoenthal, like. Just he had Winterfell and Rickon on setup, and I knew it was going to be a hard one to win. And when I was able to put Khal Drogo on the board, he was able to milk it to make sure that I'm not able to do anything against his Winterfell.
Mm, okay.
So that was one of the matchups where I was more scared. If they're able to flood the board with Lycerus scouts, I'm not able to claim enough. I'm not able to do enough against them to stop the power grab that they have.
Yeah, that is actually something I was expecting going into Worlds, kind of was a resurgence of Stark, and it didn't really pan out the way I thought it would, but it felt to me like they had a lot of very useful tools against both Targ Sea of Blood and Lanny Shadows, but que sera sera, I suppose.
Yeah, so the three games I did win against Stark, I was able to clear their board or most of their board round one or round two, where the game against Chris, like I said, he had all the control cards to slow me down,
yeah,
and was able to rush me to power quickly. And then against Matt Lay, he was just able to put bodies on the board every turn. I think his dead pile was up to 10 or 12 characters by the end of the game, but he was able to put bodies on the board and just get some power on Robb Stark and win the game.
So that one was just a classic slugfest, basically.
Yeah, because he was
Schoenthal had a lot to do with Winterfell stopping your reactions and Rickon stopping search, and then Matt just slugged it out and challenged.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well. I was hoping that I had a bit more interesting ground to cover when I first looked at questioning a little about your losses during the day. I had missed that they were both Stark when I saw the agendas. So that does, I guess, flatten the differences available in them. I'm sure there were a lot of very similar cards, despite the different agenda choices.
They were different. So Matt Lay was on King Robb, obviously, in Stark Sea of Blood. A lot of different cards. Obviously, there's a lot of similar ones, but still, I didn't see the full deck list. But Matt Lay was on Grey Wind. The chomp at the board. There was some differences there, mm-hmm. where one was more aggressive, the other one was more controlled. And then I wish I could say more about the other three Starks, but I didn't get to see much of their decks before I was able to wipe them out.
Okay, that was going to be my next question. In the matches you won, whether you saw some of those things like Rickon and Winterfell and the like, and found a way over the top of those, or if those type of cards just didn't come up.
I don't think I've seen Winterfell, so I don't know for Cameron. If Cameron was running it, I know Tagore was running it, but didn't have the gold to play it, or he decided to play something else instead. To put bodies on the board, he only had one military icon on the board on turn one. So I was able to... He had Rickon and he had Bran, Lazarus Scout. He had Fat Cat and he had another character. And so he canceled the Sea of Blood trigger with Rickon, but didn't cancel the event because I already had an event in hand. He didn't cancel the event because he needed to claim Bran. If not, he had to claim his either Fat Cat or another important character. So, but I was able to just keep putting pressure on him. I think I marched him turn two to make sure that he had one less character. I think he removed, he had kept Lazarus Scout and Fat Cat. And then I knew that if I march, he either removes his passive power gain or he removes his military icon that kneels my characters. So I knew I had to do that. I just kept the pressure on Tagore. Tagore is the only game I was able to get Drogon out on the board, and I just burned through his characters. It was a massacre. it felt bad. You take the deck and you want to win with it, but you still feel bad for your opponent to not have a chance to actually have a good game. But I just had all the pieces, and it was the same against Cameron. Against Cameron, I was able to wipe his board early and not let him get back into the game. And for the Stark Crossing that Harrison was playing, he was able to get up to 13 power, I believe. But Intrigue Claim and Recaro, that discards a card from your hand, made sure that I was able to get the game. He had a superior claim in hand. And he was going to hit me back and win the power challenge by 5 and win the game with that. But I was able to remove his hand. So I knew it was one of the ways to win, was just to keep his board thin, which I was able to do. I think I foreclaimed him on turn one.
Oof.
And yeah, I was putting a lot of pressure, and he was letting me win on military because he wanted to hit me back for the power rush. I was able to stop it before it happened, though.
I'm still excited hearing about him playing Superior Claim in Joust. Even in Crossing, I had not seen that in quite a while, so that feels spicy.
Yeah. Well, it was open list, so I knew he was running it, so I knew I had to be careful. But I felt like it was the card he had in hand because he was not defending that turn. So when I got it with the Recaro trigger, I was pretty happy to see it go, and then his hand was empty from there on.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the deck list viewing, there's been tons of discussion other times on whether that's actually a net positive or negative. We're not going to really get into that, but I'm curious about how the process went for you. You had, I think it was 5 minutes, right, to study. Did that feel like it was about the right amount of time? Were there specific cards you were trying to look through people's list, you know, quickly to see if they had, or were you just trying to absorb the whole picture? You know, how did that process go?
So, I was used to it with the World Cup, where we could have the open list, basically during the whole game. I was used to it, and I thought it was an advantage for me playing in that event and knowing what you're looking for before the game. Against Tom McKenzie and against Alex Black, I knew they were only two cards different before the game. So we exchanged it, we looked at it, and then we proceeded to just start the game. Well, set up everything. We didn't need the full 5 minutes, probably needed 10 seconds. Against Harrison, like you asked earlier, who was my testing group? I tested with Nordgal. Yeah. So Harrison was one of my testing buddies as well. So I knew his start Lord of the Crossing, but I didn't know it by heart. So I made sure to look at the key cards, how many Rickons, how many brands. He was actually on the King Rob, if I'm not mistaken.
And he
had no Winterfell in his deck list. Ooh. So that's one of the things. And I'm trying to see, does he have barring, how many barring, all the cards that are able to stop me. I knew his deck was built to just straight up rush me, though. So I was worried. I knew it's a good matchup, but I was still worried that he was able to get the good cards to just rush me from the get-go. If he had the Superior Flame on an earlier turn than the one he had it, he might have been able to win. Sam Bratz was the game I looked at the list mostly. Try to figure out what the events. I knew his deck was built to counter mine. So I was trying to remember not only the events and the characters or locations, but how many of each copy. I knew he was playing his card, the Crow is a Tricksy Bird. So I had to be careful which plot I was playing and at which moment so I don't get enabled. His deck was pretty mean. He actually knocked out Alejandro in the top 64 game, who was playing the Tarkseer Blood as well. So I was worried about that matchup. I thought that's where my event was going to stop, but was able to pull it through. I think that was my favorite game of the whole event, the Night's Watch Conclave against Sam. Had some interesting plays where I opened Fury of the Khalasar, and I had set up two Devoted Blood Riders and Aegon, and decided to sit on my gold, my three gold. And then Sam proceeded to Marshaling. He had played Late Summer Feast. And when he decided to drop Clytus and was going to steal a goal, and I told him to wait. I might have an action before.
Oh, yeah.
And I proceeded. Yeah, so I took out Aegon during the Marshaling phase, because if I didn't, I just had three gold that was going to be useless during the challenge phase. And that actually came back to hurt him a lot, because he only had one ranger on the board, and only one gold left. So he couldn't marshal his old forest hunter to be able to play the watchers on the wall.
So
that was a big swing that turn for him. And with Furry, I was able to bring out Khal Drogo, so I was able to foreclaim him that turn instead of my character's dying.
Wow.
That was a very interesting game. And Sam actually was able to stay in the game after that, but I was able to pull away at his hand every turn and make sure that the only times I would attack later on in the game was when my important characters had dupes. So even if he plays Watchers, I was still protected. So I knew how to beat his deck, but I was still very worried about it. And then I played against Bera Cohort twice, so I knew what I was looking for. I was looking for if they have the events that either in the name of your king or privileged position, and looking at the plot line. So parlay at Storm's
End. Were you seeing a lot of in the name of your king and privileged position in both of those then?
Only Ryanwood was running privileged position. And none of them were running in the name of your king. Hano was on two hand stretchmen, though.
Okay. Yeah. Man, I am a little surprised. I would have figured, you know, guessing on people's perceptions of the meta going in, that in the name of your king would have been there.
Yeah, I thought I was going to see it, but they weren't playing it. And I was looking as well for Parley. Parley is one of the plots that just stops us very quickly, and I don't remember if Ryan Wood was running it, but I know Hano opened with it.
Okay.
And I was also looking at the count of attachments. It's one of the important things of what are they able to cohort into, what tricks can they do. So how many bodyguards, how many sealed at hand, how many Azor Ahai. Those are the cards that I was looking for the Barrow matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Also, how many small lords or ladies did they have? Well, mostly ladies. in case they're running Heir to the Iron Throne, how often can they use it early? So those are the kinds of things I was looking for in the Bera matchup. Obviously, I was setting up my games against Bera to be able to Valor Morghulis on opening, which is what I did against Ryan, but his setup was not that good, and I decided not to Valor it away. But yeah, it was interesting, and mostly the games went like I thought they would go from testing, since I played most of the games I played. I played 3 Stark Sea of Blood, I played 5 Star Crossing, so, and 2 Barrack Warhorse, so that's most of my event right there.
Okay. All right. I think that's some good insight, hopefully a little different angle. I know I had promised you this would only be around a half an hour recording, but I don't necessarily want to cut you off if you have any other memories of the weekend or insights, or just want to, you know, give people a sappy send off or anything like that. So is there anything else you want to hit for sure?
The only thing I would add was what people keep asking me, how does it feel to win? And like, people think that the only good thing that I had about this mm-hmm. weekend was winning, especially my friends who don't play the game. And for people who hesitate to go to these events, even if the official organized play is over, I would recommend to go to, if you're in Europe, go to Stalik. If not, try to make it anyways. If you're hesitant about these big events, because everyone is just so welcoming, winning was just part of the weekend. But me getting to meet everyone, I wish I would have went to Worlds before. I just never was able to go in November. But definitely recommend people to go to those big events, because getting to meet everyone, obviously winning helps to meet people since you go deeper into the event and then everyone wants to talk to you. But everyone that I did talk to before was super nice, and it was just much sweeter when I was able to win or even continue into the event. People were cheering me on and asking me how my games were going as I kept going. So I really hope people are not going to stop playing just because the official organized play is over. This community is just so awesome.
You beat me to it. That was going to be my very, very last question for you, was going to be whether you were going to keep playing. So
100%. I haven't played since World and I needed a bit of a break, but 100%. Like I mentioned on Zero Reserve, I'm even trying to make it to make it to Stalik this year, especially if it's going to be the World Championship. So
awesome.
Yeah, definitely going to keep playing. Probably going to be playing some fun janky decks right now, but as soon as I start planning other events, I'm gonna get back into playtesting more seriously.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing whatever you get up to next, particularly the janky decks. That's more my angle usually. But yeah, good luck to you at Stalik. Or good luck getting to Stalik. There we go. And then good luck playing at Stalik.
Well, thanks. And thanks for having me on, Will.
Yeah, thanks for coming, man. Really glad to have you.
Thank you. Thanks, and thanks for having me on, Will.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the second segment of The White Book this time around. We are still chatting World Championship. We're a little slower on the uptake than we have been on the past, but I think most folks probably don't mind a more leisurely pace these days. So joining me for this segment is our newly crowned 2019 Melee champion, Richard. Though I've been meaning to ask for a while, do you normally go by your full name or any variation thereof?
People just call me what they want. You know, some people call me Richard. Some people call me Walker. Some people call me Bastard. You know, it's all good.
So I could call you Dick Walker if I wanted.
If you want to. I won't be offended.
Something about that name really amuses me, so I'm pretty partial to it.
I think it says more about the people who would say it rather than me, so take that however you like.
Certainly. Well, congratulations, of course, on your victory. I think that's worth saying up front.
Thank you.
So for folks that are not familiar with you, which is probably a very tiny proportion of the Thrones world at this point, but how did you get into the game? How long you've been playing?
Well, Rebecca and I picked up a first edition core set in May 2015, only to find out the game was dying and second edition was being released.
Oh, so, no.
Yeah. But we had enough fun. Rebecca smashed me loads of times. And then later that year, I went online, spoke to some British players, and one of them came around my house to play some games. And that person was Dave Bamford. And yeah, he came around. He just won the UK Nationals that year. Or it might have been the year before. I can't remember. He'd won UK Nationals.
Okay.
And yeah, we had some games, and then I just started playing properly, I guess.
I'm noticing a real theme with other folks when I have them on to interview them on the show. Yourself and Francis earlier this week, and quite a few other people over the last couple of years. I'm noticing a real theme that you bought into first edition immediately before the cancellation was announced. So I'm glad you guys all stuck with it.
I wonder why that is. I think that must have been at a certain point in the show on the television, because I had picked up the book, started watching the TV shows. There might have been one or two series in, and then we're looking for something else, and we noticed the LCG. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's true for a lot of people.
Yeah, that makes sense. I hadn't really counted back to see where that would have lined up with the TV show. But yeah, that probably is right about the time the TV show started to hit the real popular zeitgeist. So I bet that's it.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. Well, so that got you into playing, but I think, you know, maybe more than your Melee win, folks might know you from content creation. I don't know. I think the Melee win is cooler myself, but, how'd you get into, the whole content thing?
Well, I don't really know, actually. I think I just liked watching videos online. At that stage in the game, it's still quite new, a year, maybe 2 years in, and there wasn't enough videos for my liking. So I bought a camera and said, Rebecca, make some videos and record them and edit them, and I'll talk about it with you.
Give her most of the hard work.
And she agreed. Yes, that's it. I mean, honestly, I'm known for part of being the White Walkers doing the videos, but I don't do anywhere near as much work as Rebecca does. She deserves all of the credit. She edits, she does the recording, she puts them all in files, she gets the commentary ready. I just turn up and talk rubbish for half an hour, and then leave. That's it. That's all I do. I get the easy bit.
That is the preferable bit. I can vouch for that from the podcasting side of things.
From what she said, it takes about 2 to 3 hours to get one video out. So, and you've seen the amount of videos we can churn out.
Yeah. You are definitely the most consistent video outlet these days, and just constantly. I have trouble sometimes keeping up with the import over to agot.cards. Generally, I, you know, try to space things out a little bit, but sometimes I log in to double check and I realize, oh, hey, that's imported like 4 videos from the White Walkers. Maybe I should space that out just a little bit.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay. Hey, you guys just keep doing what you're doing because folks are evidently really enjoying it. So I say keep it up.
Yeah, we're still picking up new patrons and everything. I don't understand it, even though the game has officially, unofficially died. We've still got a lot of videos to go. We've still got world videos. We've still got another Prime to get out. Mm-hmm. There's still plenty to come.
Awesome. I'm very glad to hear that. I want the content to keep rolling with the community as well, because I think that will be important to keeping the interest and excitement alive.
Agreed. And we're here to serve.
Exactly. Literally here at the moment, even.
Yeah.
So let's turn our focus then over to the actual championship that you're here for. I'm curious a little bit about your stance on Melee. I tentatively gather that it is much more popular in... Okay, it's not even tentatively. I definitively gather that it's much more popular across Europe than it is here in North America. And in particular, I feel like I see posts that it's played pretty regularly in the UK. Is it something you keep up with a lot and enjoy, and you were excited to plan to come to play Melee? Or did you just kind of jump into it, you know, just because you were there and not playing Joust?
Well, like you say, in the UK, there are a lot of people that enjoy playing Melee. noticeably down in the South, Whammer, George Anchors, and Calvin Green. The three of them, they really, really love Melee. And Calvin's an organizer of events. So he likes to put on Melee events every now and then. I myself don't really play that much. I don't understand the deck building of Melee deck quite so much. I've never really got involved in it that much. But that said, I was always going to play it in the world Melee. Otherwise, a bit of a wasted journey to fly halfway across the world and do nothing on day two.
Yeah.
And potentially day three.
So if you're not really up on the deck building, then did you just pull up a deck from the advice of one of these other folks, or did you go ahead and construct that yourself? What did you play, for that matter?
Well, I played Stark Red Door, and more often than not, the Red Door was Karhold, and in one game, it was Skagos. And I got the deck, well, one of my local players, Paul Geddes, he was sending a few Melee decks at me. But I'm also good friends with Chris Mewson, who is the European Melee champion. And he won the European Melee with Stark Red Door Karhold. And one of the decks Paul sent to me was Stark Red Door Karhold. So I looked at them both, made a few changes, and...
Okay. Yeah, I realized, because I had to ask exactly what you were playing, one of the things that personally frustrates me about the state of the community is just that it's kind of hard to track Melee tournaments and performance and that sort of thing as compared to Joust. I don't have the Jousting Pavilion reference to go look at what you played and what you faced up against. So... that's partly why I sound a little confused asking about pertinent details like that. I am curious what prompted the one game that you said you switched to Skagos. Was there another player at the table who already had my brain shut down. already had your location.
Well, that was game four, the first game of game two, and I noticed that one of my opponents was also, he put down Stark Red Door. So the first thing I did immediately was call a judge over, and I said, "Judge, we need to determine first player before this." And everyone seemed a little bit confused, and we all rolled the dice, and I won initiative out of the four of us. So I get to choose who reveals health and agendas for, you know, picking the Red Door location. And I just went straight for Skagos, which meant the other Stark Red Dwarf player had to go and get Carhold.
Okay.
I think that person was Dustin Archer. Yeah, it was. It was Dustin.
Oh. Okay. Well, I suppose there are worse positions to be in than having to be the one that started with Carhold, but it's a nice benefit to not have to.
Yeah, it gave me more flexibility because I still got the Carhold effect without having to get Carhold. So instead, I had Skagos, though almost Skagos effects were there. The downside of that was after my setup, I drew into the other two copies of Skagos.
Oh, no.
So that wasn't so good.
Not so much. But I think that type of deck is a great choice for the field in general. If there was one card that I had to pick that Melee kind of seems to revolve around right now, I think in large part that is probably Carhold and how you either, you know, build the deck so that you don't need to claim renown or whatever, or you build in your answers to somebody else at the table being Carhold, or whatever that might be. It so radically changes the pace of every game. So I don't blame you for playing it at all.
Agreed. And quite a few opponents at a few tables, they were playing decks where you would not expect winter plot generally. Mm-hmm. But they did say specifically they had tech to add two winter plots in just in case the Carhold matchup was on their table. And it was a good choice for them. And like you say, it did slow the game down. And I did enjoy playing it.
Yeah. In retrospect, I really think I probably should have found a spot for a winter plot myself. I think in general, the extra power challenges of Stormlands and Informers and such, I usually feel like I'm okay, but having that turn or two of punch by including some winter plots, I definitely see why people would do it.
Yeah, almost everybody who had the winter plots against me were running Winter Festival. Very popular because it's also a power gain as well.
Mm-hmm, right. That makes sense. I don't know how often... I would be very curious to really see how often people playing that got to trigger it, since there are so many other players eager to disrupt that trigger when you're sitting at the table.
I think everyone... I don't think I saw many summer plots at all. I think generally the trigger was active. I think on our first table, someone forgot it, but we all let them take it back. But it was a pretty forgiving melee event, I think, especially in the early rounds.
Yeah, that does sound very forgiving. Then the folks let them take that back. So how did the early rounds go for you? Were you at the top of the heap in the Swiss portion?
Good question, Will. Now let me preface this by saying I'm not really much of a melee player. But some people do call me shit talker walker. I'm pretty good at talking shit. And I think a lot of my opponents had fun for the most part. The first table I was on against another Stark player, Targaryen player, Targaryen Steel, and a Tyrell player. And I did not win that. I came second on 14 points. A guy called Brendan won. And it did look for the whole game that the Tyrell player was going to win. And then the Targ player crushed him because I gave him Crown of Gold. And he did that comedy Valyrian Steel trigger, jump it in for 4 gold on that person. That was all funny. He lost, but then he picked up a hot pie straight away in his blind bag, so that was good for him.
Yeah, that is...
everyone left the table feeling pretty happy. Except me, I finished second. That wasn't so happy, but it's fine. I moved on. In game two, I played against Chris Eggert, Pete Kanunen, and Brendan, who won the table on my first game. So I had an idea of what his deck was doing. It was like a good stuff dark deck. Pete was playing a Greyjoy, unopposed, great Kraken deck. And Chris Eggert was playing Bower, Faith, and Militant, which was very annoying because it moves power and doesn't gain power. Yeah, so I got around some of my tricks, but managed to pull out the win on that. I think I got the three of them to sort of kill each other, so that was nice. And I snuck in for the win. But then the third game of the day, I didn't do too well in. I think I came joint third. I can't really remember much of that game, to be honest. It's a bit of a blur at the end of day one. But okay. I didn't end up very well on the day. I think the top 32 of day one go through, and I was around 15th, 16th. They're not ideal. Whereas some people like Dave Bamford, I think he won all three of his games on day one, ended on 45 points. So, and he ended up on the final table.
There you go. So you were a bit of an underdog coming into things then.
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, at the beginning of day two, Rebecca said, you're going to play melee. And I was like, I don't know, I might just drop and just watch some games, you know, and just watch the cut games going on in the jail. She goes, no, you have to play, you have to play. And I was like, another 3 days of melee. I've talked so much. I've talked so much shit. I'm almost out. But, you know, she did get me to play on. And, day two, that was the first game of that was against Dustin Cameron Davison and a guy called Kevin Austin. And that was memorable because of the setting up the Skagos instead of Carhold with Dustin. But me, Cameron, and Dustin were all playing Stark, and Kevin was playing the Martell Rose combo.
Oh.
Yeah, he was the bad person, and we all basically made sure he could not get his combo off.
Whatever else happens, you just agreed to not let the combo player through. I can respect.
That's exactly what happened. But he was pretty good-natured about it, really, despite the fact everything we did meant that he couldn't do it. I held back some of my tricks and let some of the other guys expend their stuff to stop him. And unfortunately, this is the one thing I don't like about melee, with the situation at the end of this game where Dustin had to choose whether I win or Cameron wins. Because Kevin, he had nightmares. He could stop something that was going on, but he was playing his card close to his chest. And basically Dustin chose me to win. I don't particularly like that. I didn't feel good about that. But people say, that's melee. Sometimes there's a situation where people have to kingmake. And I felt really bad for Cameron.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly never a good feeling across the board. But I think I'm in the boat of folks that just admits that that's a piece of things. And in order to actually make it through an event, it's just kind of something everybody has to accept. I say to make it through the event because, in some of those situations, at least, it's really prompted by the time limit. Is that what happened in that one, that it came down to time, and so it kind of affected who was going to be able to have more power at the end? Or was that a full win?
It didn't come to time. It was down to a full win. Because people were still concerned about Kevin possibly doing the combo, where one of us was going to win in the turn we won it. And they felt like next turn Kevin was going to do his thing and we might not get to another challenge phase. That was a possibility. But I think me and Cameron were both going to get to 15 anyway. So it was really just the choice of how it happened.
Okay. I feel a little better about that generally than it coming to time and somebody having to decide between who ends with, 11 power and who ends with 12 or something, because
you know, if you actually got another round, the person that got stuck with 11 may very well be able to flat out win that table. So those feel worse to me.
Yeah, and I've been on the other end at Starlek when me and someone else, basically whoever the guy chose to go first, would win the game. And he said he chose Evan Sorgeard, over me. And when I said, "Oh, why did you choose him?" And he said, "Well, I've heard of him. I haven't heard of you."
Wow.
And he just chose the bigger name to win at that point. So it feels bad, but, you know, it's just a game at the end of the day, right? It's melee.
Right.
It's brutal.
Right. It really is. It takes a certain mindset to make it through. So let's turn our attention to the final game. You mentioned Dave was there with you. Who else was there?
Well, so we had me playing Stark Carhold. We had Dave Bamford, who'd won every single game, all five previous games up to this point. He was playing Stark Cohort, with the focus on Fast Eddie. We had Tony, also from Banter, playing Stark Cohort. The Fast Eddie deck. And then the fourth player was David Tegmeyer, Long Lance and okay. Drowned God fan. He was playing Greyjoy Banner of the Sun, a Drowned God deck. And he did have Winter Plots in his deck as well. So not one you'd normally see in Drowned God deck, but he knew what was coming. He knew what was going to be out there. So, yeah, the final itself was, we actually filmed it. So the video should come online at some point over the next 2 to 3 weeks. I'm not sure how good it's going to come out because, you know, I haven't even seen it yet. And we don't have very good vantage point to view melee. So it might be a little low, but I think we'll try and get something out if we can.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's got to be tough. A much wider spread of table to try to actually view.
Yeah, we do have wide angle lens, so that might help, but, you know, we'll see. If it comes out, it comes out. If it doesn't, I'll try and get it out anyway, but not put much fanfare on it. As the game goes, it wasn't one of the most interesting games of melee. It was very good-natured at first, with the three Brits sort of having a laugh, and the German was a little bit like, "I'm being surrounded by three Brits. This isn't a very good situation for me." But there was no, you know, Brits have got to win kind of thing, anything like that. But it quickly became quite tense, especially with David Tegmeyer. He became a bit of a hedgehog. He became a bit spiky. You know, didn't want to be attacked. A little bit unwilling to cooperate at first. But then it played out, and you could see why David and Tony's deck are quite fast. They're playing Cohort with Fast Eddie, so they're running three Favor of the Old God. They're running three Melian Tome. And, of course, they've got the Frozen Solid just in case there's Carhold deck.
Ah, perfect.
Yeah, so I knew at this point, quite early, I knew that Carhold wasn't really going to do a lot. So I was of the mindset, I would just enjoy this game of melee. I've made the final. That's more than what I actually wanted. I wasn't really expecting to win. I wasn't really trying to win. I was just trying to play the game and just be quiet and watch these three obviously great melee players play while I just sort of, you know, turn some cards sideways sometimes and try and get away with it. And I think a lot of my luck in melee sort of came from choosing the titles, because someone had told me, I think it was Dave himself that had told me that there's a cycle on the card. So Master of Ships supports coin. Is that right?
I always have to look at them again to refresh myself. I am terrible at recalling who supports and rivals who.
See, I think he said as you go down the card. So obviously the coin is on the top left. So he said ship support coin, intrigue support ship, you know, and the blue supports the green kind of thing. So I kept thinking to myself, you know, if the Greyjoy players, the Drowned God players after me, and I don't want him to attack me, then I should pick the one which means he's supporting me, kind of thing. So I tried to do that a little bit, not really pick the title that was good for me, but pick the title which meant David wouldn't be attacking me so much. And I think that worked for the most part, and that's not something I'd ever really thought about in melee, because, like I said, I'm not a melee player. And in fact, the game before the final was my first ever three-player melee table, and I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know the rule changes or anything like that.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, it was, and it wasn't very pleasant either. It wasn't a great game. But that's three-player melee, right?
Yeah, they are terrible, and there were a lot of them this year. And
there was.
And we played with awkward rules, because I guess evidently the rules that most of us at this point are familiar with playing with, where you do not use the Crown Regent and you ignore supports, evidently that was never officially codified in FFG documents. So FFG said the official ruling was to play as listed in the core rule book, which just means you burn two at random at the start of each game, the three-player games, that is. And I know that definitely led to some very awkward situations and turns in games I played, let alone, you know, across the whole field.
Yeah, it's true. And it's the same again. Like, the Crown Regent wasn't taken out of the pool. And I think there were two rounds in a row where I took six challenges, three from both opponents. And that, yeah, it's just not very nice. It makes you feel a bit under attack. You feel a bit salty because there's nothing you can do about it. But you just got to try and keep in a good mood. It's just a game, right? It's just melee. They don't mean it. They don't hate you.
Yeah.
Not outwardly.
They're almost certainly about to buy you a beer as soon as the game's over.
As long as they do.
That is true. That is true. So, how
getting back to
the final. How did it actually wrap up then?
Well, David was on a lot of power coming into the final round. I think he was on around 9, 10, or 11 power. David Tegmeyer, that is. Tony wasn't that high on power. He's only on about 4 or 5. Dave was on about 6 or 7. And I think I was on around 9. You know, so I managed to sneak up a little bit. And then there was the last turn, which basically involved, I think I was made to go first, which, you know, I didn't really do a lot. I just did a power challenge or an intrigue against Tony and just got some power and got to around 9. But I had a board of Wyman, Fat Cat, and 3 or 4 Chuds, which meant that if I was attacked in military or getting toward the end of the round, I could just sack Chud to get some power on Cat. So I could get up to a little bit of power. David couldn't quite push his challenges through because how the title worked out.
Oh, okay.
Then Tony went third, but because I brought out Mira to blank his fast Eddie, that meant he couldn't really gain any power that round, which would have been, you know, the final round because time had been called. So that kind of stitched Tony up a little bit.
So the final was timed even.
Yeah, I think it was the same 1 hour 45.
Wow. I'm kind of surprised. Because the joust final wasn't timed, was it? Granted, due to that situation, it was fast.
I only watched that yesterday.
Okay.
It was fast. they originally put it at 80 minutes, the joust final, but then they changed the clock to 120 minutes.
Okay.
But there was a timer there.
Okay.
Melee final.
Yeah, that. So they didn't extend that. That's interesting. I had already had to leave to go take care of some stuff. So when your game was wrapping up and time had been called, was Joust still running, or were they trying to shut down the center basically, and you were the last thing standing?
No, we finished before the Joust final finished, and I know that. Not because I remember it, but because last night I watched the Joust final, and halfway through it, the commentator were talking about the melee had just finished.
Oh.
And you could hear all the cheering.
Okay.
So it happened halfway through the Joust final.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Sorry for that.
In the actual final. Yeah. So we were getting to Tony not being able to close out. And then Dave, he managed to get quite a lot of power on his turn, but it just wasn't quite enough. And me and Dave ended up on the same amount of power as time had been called. And David Tegmeyer was kind of antsy about it because he knew the clock was running down and he's like, can we please play and get the fifth round in? But Dave Bamford had to think about his cohort triggers and that just ate up the clock and we finished about 20 seconds after
the
clock ran out. And me and Dave both finished on the same amount of power. I'm really surprised at this point. So it goes down to cards in deck, basically. And I had one card more in my deck.
No. Wow.
And Dave normally runs 61 card deck, but because this deck was given to him, he was playing 60 cards, one card fewer. But not only that, but in the final round, I forgot a Wyman trigger, which would have made us even on cards. And then the next tiebreaker is the dead pile count.
Ah, okay.
And I had dead characters, and Dave would have won.
Wow. Yeah, I was trying to remember what the next tiebreaker was after that. So, oh, wow, that's fascinating. And gosh, it just feels so bizarre. I mean, I understand that there have to be tiebreakers set up for a variety of scenarios. So I don't mind that. And it makes sense to me that cards in deck is one of them and all that kind of thing. But it does irk me that due to a time limit that the last official, anyway, Melee Championship came down to a tiebreaker rather than a, you know, full win for somebody. Especially hearing that Joust was still running when you guys finished up. So that's unfortunate. Yep.
And I feel sorry for Dave, especially because, like I said, he won all five games. And the final, I believe, if the game goes on for another round, I believe Dave probably wins. That may not be true, but I feel like Dave deserved to win the Melee final more than I did. So, yeah, I feel sorry for Dave, especially because of that.
Well, I guess he'll have to, I don't know, actually put out another episode of banter so we can rant about it or something. I'm not sure.
That's a good point. Dave talked so much shit. I don't feel sorry for him at all. Thanks for reminding me.
You're welcome.
Served him right.
Well. We are pretty close to the time frame we were shooting for the interview, but I don't want to cut you off if you had any other anecdotes, thoughts, memories about Melee or the weekend in general that you really wanted to hit on.
Not especially. All I would say is if you're not very good at Melee, if you don't really enjoy Melee that much, you know, talk to someone, get an actual Melee deck. Don't play a troll deck, play an actual Melee deck. And you never know, you might actually go and win. It just goes to show you don't necessarily have to be good, but if you can get three other people to kill each other, you might.
And what is more Game of Thrones than that?
Exactly.
Well, thanks then for coming on the show and working around both our time difference and the cold you said you had earlier this week. And once again, congratulations on your victory.
Thank you, Will. Thanks. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Once again, congratulations on your victory.